States v. Gearhart. Ms. Holland.
Good morning. May it please the Court, my name is Erin Holland. My colleague Eileen Ridley and I represent Defendant Appellate Monte Gearhart. Mr. Gearhart is entitled to dismissal of the indictment because of the District Court's complete abdication of its duty to protect Mr. Gearhart's right to a fair trial. First, the District Court erred by failing to ensure that Mr. Gearhart was brought to trial in a rapid fashion, as required by the Speedy Trial Act and the Sixth Amendment, creating substantial prejudice to Mr. Gearhart. Second, the District Court erred by disqualifying Mr. Gearhart's trial counsel, who had represented him for over a year and a half, just 1 week before trial. The government has argued that you should find waiver of Mr. Gearhart's Speedy Trial Act claim. We disagree. Seventh Circuit cases have permitted a finding of forfeiture instead of waiver. We believe that the circumstances of this case are such that you should find forfeiture, not waiver, in this case.
Didn't the defense counsel seek 7 continuances during the course of the pendency of the case?
The trial counsel did seek, there were actually 9 motions for continuances. However,
9 by the defense.
Yes. Many of those continuances overlapped with other co-defendants' motions for continuances. And one of our arguments is that there was no the district court did not make any steps to ensure that Mr. Gearhart was aware of or consented to the continuances filed by his counsel. Barker v. Wingo.
Now, is there any authority for requiring the consent of the defendant to a request for a continuance?
Barker v. Wingo recognizes the possibility, as does U.S. v. Lloyd, a Ninth Circuit case, recognizes the possibility that counsel may have reasons for wanting a delay in a case that are both contrary to the defendant's interests and perhaps without his knowledge or consent. In this case, the continuances were sought for reasons like Mr. Shostak's vacation, or he had another trial in the Southern District of California. Were those continuances in Mr. Gearhart's best interest?
I don't understand. What, suppose he says he has a trial in California. What is Gearhart supposed to say? No, don't go to your trial in California? What?
I think yes. I think it was the district court's responsibility. Mr. Gearhart has no burden to bring himself to trial. It was the district court's responsibility to bring Mr. Shostak in. Almost all of these motions were granted by
Minnesota. That's a separate issue from failing to consult the client.
No, because the burden was on the court to ensure that Mr. Gearhart.
Well, what is supposed every time a continuance is sought by the defendant's lawyer, the defendant is brought from jail to appear before the judge to see whether.
What? No, not necessarily. For example,
not necessarily.
I think the district court has a duty.
Is he supposed to find out what the lawyer told his client?
There could be an affirmation, both Mr. Cripps and
really. Mr. This is making the process even more cumbersome than it is.
But it's a fundamental right.
Every time a lawyer requests a continuance, you need an affidavit from the client?
Not an affidavit. In Mr. Cripps, an affirmation from the...
What's an affirmation?
In the motion for continuance. I have told my client about this continuance, and they have consented to it. Otherwise, how do we know that the fundamental right of speedy trial is being guaranteed to the client? If it's the court's burden to ensure a speedy trial, and it's not necessarily in the client's best interest, but, you know, I want to go on vacation, doesn't the district court have a responsibility to ensure that these continuances are in the best interest? It's one thing to say a motion for continuance for discovery is improper, but things like vacation seems something else.
So your view is that if the lawyer has a possibly frivolous ground, like a vacation, for a continuance, he has to get his client's consent? Is that the idea?
Absolutely. If it's his right.
Are there cases that hold that?
I'm not aware of any cases holding that directly, but as I said, both Barker and U.S. v. Lloyd recognize the possibility that counsel may have an interest in delaying a trial that is not in the client's interest.
Well, the judge can ask the lawyer,
exactly.
Suppose if there are a large number of a request for continuance going beyond what he thinks is
and
normal.
In Lloyd, that's exactly
can
what the
ask him whether he has his client's consent or not, can in his discretion. But you want to make it a rule that he has to do that, or that the lawyer has got to include that in his request and all sorts.
I don't think I'm asking for the court to make a rule. I think the district court here failed its burden and duty to ensure
that to Gearhart of an earlier trial.
In this case, there would have been a substantial benefit to Mr. Gearhart of an earlier trial. In the first place, all five of Mr. Gearhart's co-defendants reached plea agreements as a result of superseding indictments. Four of those co-defendants testified against him at trial. An earlier trial would have meant that those four co-defendants didn't testify against him.
Well, it might have speeded the prosecutor up in working out deals with those four to get them to flip.
I'm sorry, say again?
It might have speeded the prosecutor up in making the deals to get them to flip.
Possibly, but we don't know. The second substantial prejudice...
I don't think your first claim is legitimate. You're saying he could have derived some strategic advantage from... That has nothing to do with, or very little to do with, guilt or innocence. So what's your second point?
But it hampered his defense. Barker v.
I'm just saying, given the scheduling of the other trials, it might be better to go first, might be better to go last. That's just gamesmanship. That has nothing to do with the merits of his case.
The other prejudice is that his counsel was disqualified 2 weeks before trial. If the trial hadn't been delayed for over a year and a half, his counsel wouldn't have been disqualified. Instead, he was forced to endure all of these continuances. 1 week before trial, he's assigned new counsel.
How did his ability to defend himself, how was that impaired by the delay? I mean, his lawyer's disqualification, that's unrelated to delay.
The disqualification?
Yeah.
No, if not for the delay, they never would have found...
The problem you have is that a delay, as a matter of happenstance, can advantage or disadvantage a client because of unrelated activities or parallel activities. That's very different from saying, the delay hurt me because... my key witness died. And that's the kind of thing that...
I don't think Barker v. Wingo excludes the possibility of other kinds of prejudice. It doesn't say the only way you can be prejudiced.
Because these other types that you mentioned, your points, he could equally well benefit from the delay as be hurt by the delay, right? Those are unpredictable things. So.
I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Holland. So, Ms. Robertson?
May it please the Court, my name is Amanda Robertson, and I'm the Assistant U.S. Attorney in this case, and I was trial counsel in this case. And as Your Honor pointed out, there's a very real possibility that had we gone to trial earlier, we would have gotten our pleas earlier. That's one of the reasons why this should be brought, the speedy trial claim should be brought in the district court. It will allow the government the opportunity to put evidence in the record as to support. Starting out with the first issue, though, the district court did not abuse its discretion in disqualifying court-appointed counsel. The government filed a motion to disqualify attorney Burke Shostak. Burke Shostak filed a motion to withdraw. While the defense on appeal makes reference to the defendant's motion to withdraw in its statement of facts, it terms its issue as whether the district court erred in granting the government's motion to disqualify. not really referencing the fact that, in fact, Judge Gilbert did what the defense requested in this case. He granted the defense motion to withdraw. The defendant's motion to withdraw indicated, it appears that the undersigned counsel has a conflict of interest for which it would be appropriate to appoint new counsel to represent the defendant. The undersigned counsel prayed that the court grant his motion, withdraw and appoint new counsel for the defendant. After Judge Gilbert heard the statements of both counsel for the government and defense counsel, he granted both motions. So this is a situation where Judge Gilbert did what the defendant requested in the trial level, and now on appeal, he's saying, we wish the judge had not granted our motion. Regarding the speedy trial violation, the case law is now clear in the Seventh Circuit that if you do not raise the speedy trial issue and do not file a motion to dismiss in the trial court, it is waived for purposes of the Speedy Trial Act. The cases relied on specifically in the defendant's reply brief all predate Morgan and White. And in those cases, they said this court recognized that the act, by its express terms, characterizes the defendant's failure to move for dismissal as a waiver, not forfeiture. So all of the recent cases by the circuit have recognized that if the government raises waiver, it is a waiver, not a forfeiture. Regarding the Sixth Amendment violation, there was no violation of speedy trial rights in that case. The main issue is whether the government or the defendant was more to blame for the delay. And as this court pointed out, the delay in this case was that defense counsel filed 9 motions to continue, based many times on the amount of discovery to review. A couple were scheduling conflicts, and the co-defendants filed 10 motions. Many of those motions overlapped. On appeal, the defendant says the defendant's continuances should not be counted against the defendant, but doesn't offer support for that. And the Supreme Court recently has reiterated in Vermont v. Brillion that delay caused by defense counsel is attributed to the defendant and that the defendant's attorney is an agent. There was no speedy trial violation in this case, and the district court correctly disqualified defense counsel based on both the request of the government and the request of the defendant. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Robertson. Ms. Holland, something further?
The government highlights that Mr. Shostak filed a motion to withdraw. However, that motion was filed after the government's motion for disqualification. And at the disqualification hearing, Mr. Shostak made it clear to the district court that it was not a heartfelt motion that he had filed.
Motion. Wait, you'll have to explain that.
That was the language he used. It was not a heartfelt motion that he filed.
Why did he file it at all?
I don't know for sure, but
it was a clear conflict. There was no question he had a conflict.
There was a
his partner
conflict.
And son had represented the snitch, the jailhouse snitch.
Exactly.
So he had a conflict.
There was a conflict. However, the district court asked the government, is this testimony crucial? The government replied, that's not the appropriate question. The district court said, then what is the appropriate question? The government responded that the jailhouse snitch had good, relevant information to offer. That was not the appropriate response. The government should have had to show that this was crucial information to its case. As the transcript shows, and as we argued in our brief, this information was duplicative. And as the government acknowledged in its appellate brief, this information only corroborated what Mr. Cripps testified to at trial.
Well, when your burden of proof is beyond a reasonable doubt, it helps to have corroboration. And there was some additional information that wasn't included in the other testimony, wasn't there?
No. All of the testimony that Mr. Rogers provided was provided also by other witnesses. Second, the district court didn't take any steps to ensure that this information was critical to the government's case. It didn't hold an evidentiary hearing. It didn't consider other less onerous options, for example, a stipulation
or appointing auxiliary counsel.
Did your client offer any of those other alternatives?
No, it did not. Court could have also considered conflict waivers. Instead, the court simply accepted that good relevant information was sufficient to justify disqualification of counsel, even though counsel had represented Mr. Gearhart for over a year and a half. Instead, they rushed to trial, and he was represented by counsel who had only 6 weeks to prepare.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Ms. Holland, and thank you also for accepting the appointment and for your vigorous efforts on behalf of the defendant. And we thank Ms. Robertson as well.